We only have 30 seconds to describe the newest specialty flavor in the Signature Crafted Recipes Collection by McDonald's, Garlic White Cheddar. It starts with crispy, juicy, and delicious buttermilk chicken, layered with a dramatic drizzle of delicious, delectably creamy garlic aioli, a crunchy medley of crispy garlic chips, topped with a slice of melty white cheddar cheese, finished with iceberg lettuce, and a juicy tomato slice all between a soft, warm artisan roll. Luckily, you can take all the time you need to savor it. And don't forget to make time to savor our other signature crafted recipes, pico guacamole and sweet barbecue bacon. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. 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 No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Hello and welcome to Spiritual Insights, everyone. Whether you're tuning in through Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, YouTube, or elsewhere, I want you to know how much I appreciate all of you spending time with me as we explore all the amazing topics that are available to help us connect more consciously with spirit and discover our true essence. You may be familiar with The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. Well, today we're joined by Dr. Tricia Working, author of The Fur Agreements, Lessons in Consciousness from the Animals. Naturally, fur is spelled F-U-R and represents our human relationship with our animal friends. But let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Tricia. She is a healer who facilitates miraculous experiences for pets and their owners. She is an expert in animal consciousness, spirituality, and their interrelationship with mankind, and speaks frequently on these topics. In 1993, she founded Paws for Thought Animal Foundation, and of course, Paws is spelled P-A-W-S. That's really sweet. She currently holds the position of president of the Southern Regional Business Council, as well as serving as an author and mentor with the Women's Life Link. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Tricia Working to the show. Hi, Dr. Tricia. So glad you're finally here.
Hey, Charlotte. So good to be here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. How is your year starting out?
Well, I tell you, it has started out with a lot of spiritual lessons and a birthday and an anniversary. So I'm working to process all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've had some interesting experiences this month as well. But I'm really looking forward to this year. Are you
I'm excited about what the world is being brought, what's being brought forth for us, and just really looking forward to seeing what happens for all of us this coming year.
Me too, and it's good to feel that excitement and kind of shed the sense of dread we've had for the past several years with all of the shifts and changes that we've all had to undergo on various levels. I know it hasn't been easy, but I think we're through the worst of it, and for that I have a very big sense of relief. I assume you do as well?
Absolutely. I'm just ready to be grateful now and move into the energies.
Yes, me too. Well, I want to kind of start at the beginning, Dr. Tricia, and in your book you say you've been researching and communicating with animals for 30 years. I was curious, how old were you when you recognized that you had a profound relationship with animals?
Honestly, that has gone on my whole life, and I in my mid-50s now, so since I was about probably 7 or 8 years old, I guess, I've mm-hmm. always had pets and always felt that connection to them above and beyond what I did with regular human beings.
Mm. That can seem kind of strange as a child until you kind of get comfortable in those energies.
Totally. It was the only real place I actually felt safe and acknowledged for who I really was, I think, now that, you know, as I look back on it. Mm-hmm. But it was always my safe place was with the animals wrapped in their paws.
Yes. I I'm similar in that respect. I also there were several safe places I had where I always liked to climb into trees and sing. That was my safe, quiet places. And then, of course, with the animals, and you could feel the love coming from them, always made me feel better. So I totally understand your experience. But I wanted to let everybody know a little more about your foundation, Pause for Thought Animal Foundation. What inspired you to found that?
It was very interesting. I was living in Atlanta, and I was finishing up my PhD and realized I just could not write all day long. And a news item came on the TV about a local animal shelter that had been vandalized. Turns out it was literally right behind my apartment complex. So I decided I needed to just go over there and pet the cats. And that's what I started out doing. And ultimately, I ended up on the board of directors and running it, and realized through that process that I had some gifts to offer and some things to be doing, and that I needed to just start my own. That way I could do things in the way that I felt was the best with all that I had learned. And so I actually then created Pause for Thought. And having been an English professor, the name kind of just created itself.
Yes, I'm familiar how they kind of emerge into your consciousness, and it just makes perfect sense. And you can just feel it in the title that I know there's a lot of good things happening. And you mentioned gifts. Are you speaking of your healing gifts? Or other?
Absolutely. I had a wonderful mentor when I was in college and worked with for about 10 years on opening all my gifts and abilities up, the healing, the empathic, the psychic, just everything. But it took me many years to really gain comfort and trust in them. They run in our family, and I've started developing mine in my probably early 20s.
Okay. And what kind of experiences did you have that kind of made you realize the depth of those gifts? Like, were you helping animals recover from illness or surgery?
Back then, it really just started out. There was always an affinity for animals, but then also I would be having conversations with people whom I didn't even know, and things would just roll out of my mouth, and it would help them and gain understandings about whatever they were going through. And I realized that I had this ability to, like they did in the ancient times, the way Jesus actually did it, to literally just lay my hands on a person or an animal and help facilitate healing. And so I started working with that, and it wasn't what I wanted to do, because I wanted to do all the great psychic stuff, you know, but
uh-huh.
That was one of the major gifts, and it took me a long time to really process within my own spirit how to do that and how to do that to help. I always helped whenever I was asked, but I was just never completely comfortable with it. And finally, I just had to accept it and say, God gave me this, and I can't just turn away from it, so I'm going to acknowledge it now and take it completely in myself. So that's what I've been doing for about probably 10 years officially, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's very important when we embrace the gifts that we're given, how everything tends to go right and fall into place for us. So I'm glad you came to that conclusion that you should do that.
Well, thank you. It was a journey for sure, but I can honestly say I'm truly happy now, and I have embraced it, and that's the perfect word, because at 25 I thought I knew everything, and I didn't want to embrace it. I wanted to go my way, and finally realized that was not necessarily the best way.
Yes. No, there's a certain current to the river, and we have to follow it if we're going to find contentment, so I'm glad you did. So let's get to the fur agreements. I think the title is enlightening and humorous all at the same time. And I love the book. Love this book. And I just want to start at this place. What lessons and messages are truly at the heart of the fur agreements?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. there are really two levels to the book. The one that the name implies is honestly the fact that the animals come to us just as we come to Earth with sacred contracts, destinies, and purposes to fulfill. And they make the sacred agreements on the other side just as we do as to what they will go through, who they're going to run into, what kind of experiences they will have, what roles they will play. And we don't tend to think of that in general conversation the way we do when we talk about our life's purpose or destiny. And so that's the first layer. And then the deeper layer, which was the original context of the book before it evolved multiple times, was actually lessons on loss and love and what happens when our pets die and all the different steps and challenges that we go through, and there are a number of them that everyone goes through at some point, and those lessons in loss and love were the original heart of the book.
Mm. Yeah, it's really hard, the loss part. You know, when they're new, it's always the most fun, but that was the toughest for me, is when they go home and being left to grieve. Very difficult, but we're going to talk a little bit more about that later in the segment. I wanted to ask you, you state that your pet indeed does have a message for you. How do we decipher the message? How do we recognize the unique message an animal holds for us, be it canine, feline? How do you do that?
Well, of course, it takes a little practice, but basically the animals come here with six distinct purposes, and they may achieve all of those, but they come here to love, to heal, to serve, to protect, to teach, and to inspire. And so the very first thing is, once we recognize that they are sentient beings with souls and purposes, then we just start looking back on our lifetime with the animals and seeing what kind of things come up to our consciousness. What do we realize? Did some things happen in our experiences with them? Did they teach us something? Throughout the book, I raise different questions at the end of each chapter to kind of help jog people's consciousness into thinking about what the animals have meant to them and what roles they performed in their lives. Some it's very clear, like if an animal actually saves your life, or if you have like a German Shepherd who we all tend to think of as a protector, that kind of thing. But then other lessons on healing and things like that go much deeper, and we're able literally just by asking questions of ourselves to find out what the roles are that the animals played that were originally in what we have now, and even the animals destined to come to us.
Interesting. And in touching on the concept of having a sacred contract, it's what just flashed in my mind as I was listening to you was, sometimes a pet is intended for one person but then naturally gravitates toward another member of the family.
Well, actually, that is both. You know, if you subscribe to the principle that there are no coincidences, and I
right.
do, then when a pet comes to you, however it got there through whatever routes, and sometimes they go through several other owners as well, let me retract that because I don't want to use the word owner anymore, but guardians, but they go through several guardians to finally get to you. Everything they do has a purpose, and so even if they start out with you and then gravitate to another member of your family, you all had contracts and agreements you made for those things to happen, and the fun lies in uncovering what those were, because, again, we're just not trained to think about that. We're trained to think of the animals as pets who are here to basically kind of serve us and comfort us and not necessarily be a teacher or someone that brings us even to understand our own divinity. So that's the excitement from the fur agreement standpoint.
Right. Yes, most people think of them as sources of entertainment and companionship. But we've seen cases where, for instance, people in nursing homes, sick children, when how they light up when a puppy is around, or a kitten, or something soft to hold and cuddle, and the effect it has on people. It's almost tangible, wouldn't you say?
Well, it is.
It's obvious to me.
Well, yes, and you know what I believe, Charlotte, is that really the pets, the animals, period, no matter what they are our only true sources of unconditional love that we experience with the divine, because they have no agendas, they have no motives, they have nothing to gain from it like we do or don't when we put strings on relationships. And so they're our first taste of that just universal unconditional love. And if we can open ourselves up, the animals can either help us fulfill our humanity or show us our lack of it and then help us renegotiate that if we're willing.
I totally agree. They act out of instinct, and yet they act out of pure conscious awareness. And I wanted to ask your opinion. I've had several clients where I've had to read for their animals, and I had to explain, you know, animals are a reflection of their guardians. How do you feel about that? Because I've seen some amazing similarities between animals and their guardians.
Well, absolutely. That's so true. They mirror our own internal and often external landscapes. I've known of so many cases, both here that I've dealt with and then even the research studies, you know, that show pets will tend to take on illnesses so that their family members don't have to. If a family is going through stress like divorce or a terminal illness, they will take on the stress from that. I've heard of animals losing their hair because their owners started losing their hair. There are so many things, because they are so truly and deeply connected to us at the deepest, most intimate heart levels, they will try to take things away so that we don't have to experience them. I had one cat, even Karma, who sacrificed himself so that other cats would not have to be taken from me instead. And when I understood that, I just was amazed and heartbroken to realize that they could do something like that for us.
Yes, I read that, and I felt bad for you. You had some resistance, but eventually you kind of had to get comfortable with the idea that he was trying to make room for other cats to live in your home.
Yes, and I had been told that there would be another loss, or at least one other loss during that particular year. I think that was 2009. And what I was shown much later was that if Karma had not actually sacrificed himself, it would have been one of the ones I was even more deeply connected to. And Karma was a case of he loved me so deeply, and I loved him, but he was not one of my major connections the way some of the others were. And when I realized what he had done for me, I was just so heartbroken, because to me, he gave up everything just so that I wouldn't have to go through that with the ones that I was more connected to. And it was okay with him, because he knew that he still had a place in my heart, and that was just his very own place. And it took me a long time to really facilitate in myself the understanding about the layers and the degrees of love that the animals and then, of course, also humans have. No one can take another's place. They each have their very own place, however large or small it is. It's not about that. It's just about that being their space.
I see. Well, let's talk about I want to talk about the book structure. And the way you put this together is brilliant. You've assembled in three sections with several chapters beneath each section. You start with the deep work with the animals begins in section one. You talk about your history with the animals, and then your history with the animals and spirit. In section two, you begin with God's wish for us, the introduction to the fur agreements, God's wish for us. Master agreements. What are master agreements?
Oh, that's a great question. What that is, when I was being given the information on the book, what I realized and was shown is that this occurred in two levels, okay? And the master agreements are the agreements that all of the animal kingdom, whether they're in the air, the sea, whether they're cockroaches, but just every conceivable animal makes on behalf of humanity, and they're four. They're large overlapping agreements, and they are to live in harmony with humanity, to forgive us our inhumanity, to help us remember our divinity, and then to attend as way showers so that we can, again, find our humanity, our lack of it, or fulfill it. And so that's for the entire animal kingdom. And that's just the beginning, the tip of the iceberg, if you will.
Yes, it sounds like it is the tip of the iceberg, because I'm thinking of so many different scenarios, in particular where animals come, and I believe they understand their role in the food chain to support other animals and humans.
I'm glad you mentioned that. If I can address that for just a second, because that question has come up so often, and I would just like to invite your listeners to just begin to think about this as a concept, that whether it be the food chain, whether it be the baby seals in Canada or the dolphins in the cove or the pit bulls that are being fought, what I was shown is that every animal comes in agreeing to its purpose, and the ones that break our hearts and horrify us, where we're shown the total lack of humanity, those animals came in to serve as teachers and as lessons in how not to do and how to do later on. And they took those missions on because they were old souls and they were ready to basically sacrifice themselves for our higher good. And it's heartbreaking, and some people say it's a cop-out, but when I began to really be able to process that information, I was just, again, in awe that the animals would come and be willing to sacrifice themselves so that we could learn to be better and do better.
I agree with you 100%, because even in watching humans, let me provide a comparison. I rarely watch the news. Sometimes I check in to see what's going on out there, and then we see these instances where someone's mistreated or someone is prejudiced against. I heard something just recently that I found that I was very disappointed to learn. But with all of these instances, whether it's with the death of humans, all these shocking cases that are reported in the news, what they do is they bring us together and help raise our awareness, and in so doing, raise our vibration. It serves a purpose. And so I'd like to swing that back to the animals. And with every instance that we see of cruelty or malnourishment, or we need to think of ourselves, look at that, and then begin to restructure the way we see, react, and treat the animals. We have to include them as God's creatures. Do you agree?
100%. I think that really the Native Americans exemplified this the best of all, because, you know, when they would hunt the buffalo, they would use every part of it, and they would give such thanks for all the buffalo did, and, of course, every animal that they ever engaged with. And I think that's where we're kind of missing a little bit in society. We don't know how to give thanks, especially when you do see the stories about the slaughterhouses or things like that. You get caught up in the inhumanity, and you don't understand that we have to be thankful that they did this for us and that they are providing these things for us, and it's part of the agreements. It's part of all of the initial agreements, and it's not something that we should try to stop their agreements, but we can certainly do things if we want to make the lives better of the food animals or things like that, but to not interfere necessarily in their agreements.
Right, but handle the situation with a lot more love and responsibility, and I think that that's what God expects of us in approaching that, and I think we're capable of it. I think some people just need to really wrap their minds around that and know that whatever additional expense is incurred, it's certainly worth it. Just my spiritual point of view, you know.
Well, I think that's true, too. And the thing is, you know, anytime we get caught up, and I've certainly done this when I was much younger, and I try not to now, though I may have a feeling here and there about things, but when we get caught up in fighting against something, all of our energy is channeled into the fight and into being against. And so if we go with your perspective of working from the aspect of love and working toward that in making whatever changes could be required, that's where we're of the most good and the highest use, not fighting against something.
That's very true. Very true. Totally different. It might sound the same, but it really is a totally different energy in trying to affect a solution to something that we identify as a problem. I want to ask one more question, and then we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I want to discuss Section 3 of the book, and we'll take some calls, okay?
Okay, terrific.
But what I wanted to ask, in Chapter 6, under Section 2, what you call the pet accords, tell me about these accords between the animals who act as our pets and us.
Okay, what those are, these are actually what I would call the fur agreements, and there are actually 23 accords that the animals make to us. For example, as your beloved pet, I agree to heal your heart, to break your heart sometimes, to stand beside you always. And then there are 23 accords we make back to them as well. And that these are the actual real messages that the pets bring to us in one form or another.
Fantastic. Yes, devotion and heal your heart. I was very close to my mother's dog, and that precious thing, her name was Ramble. Anytime I was crying, she was right there to make me feel better. In fact, when my mother called me to let me know that she had to put her down, that she had progressed to not being able to function, I just started crying. I was like, wait till let me just get out of work. I'll come. Let me just don't do this without letting me say goodbye. And I got there, and her dog actually comforted me. In the hour before she passed away, and we took her to the vet. But the look in her eyes and the way a dog will put their paw on you, like, it's okay. It's okay. I understand what's happening. I'm going with the process, and you need to join me in the process. Just precious, precious moment, you know?
It is, and it shows that they understand, and what we've got to learn is that that part is their journey, and we're there to support them. That's not about us in those moments, so we're not used to thinking of it like that, but
right.
We're there to support them in their process, and later there will be time for us in our journey, but this time it's about them and what do they require from us to help them be able to accept the call of being called back home.
Wow. Okay, perfect place to take a pause, and we're going to go to commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about this a little more, the grief of losing a pet and how we can better handle that, okay?
Okay.
All righty. We'll be right back right after these messages, ladies and gentlemen.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Explore new areas of interest, expand your knowledge, and gain clarity about your life's purpose at the Ocala Enter Center. Affectionately known as OIC, the Ocala Enter Center, just 2 blocks south of Town Square, offers workshops, classes, healing meditations, and special events for the Ocala, Gainesville, and Central Florida spiritual community. Check out our calendar of events at ocalaintercenter.com. And if you're looking for a place for your next workshop or seminar, go to ocalaintercenter.com and give Gene a call.
Welcome back, everyone. If you are just joining us, we are here with Dr. Tricia Working, author of The Fur Agreement, Lessons in Consciousness from the Animals. Dr. Tricia has been sharing the most amazing information with us and her work with the animals and how she facilitates various experiences with our beloved companions. And before the break, we were talking about the experience of losing a pet and how we're here to support them. So welcome back. And Dr. Tricia, let's go to Section 3, the Transcendent Experiences, and how we can deal better with the loss of a beloved companion, as you state in Chapter 7.
Okay. How would you like to start that?
Wherever you'd like.
Okay. Really, what I have found out is that when we're in the process of losing, or in our way of thinking, losing our beloveds, one of the first things we have to do is learn that it requires a sense of detachment from us, and not detachment as in not caring or trying to protect ourselves, but detaching from the situation in a spiritual manner so that we can observe, we can facilitate what they are asking from us, whether they want to be alone when they pass, even if we want to be with them. Whatever the lessons are in that process, detachment is one of the first things. Then we also have to learn that, you know, how we all pray for healing, and usually what we mean about that is we want them back and we want them whole and we want it done now. And we have to begin to understand that at the highest level, when we pray for the healing of a beloved pet or family member, then that often can mean we are losing them from this earthly plane, because the work has been done. And so for us it's a loss, but for them they're moving on to the next experience. So we have to be very, very careful when they do become sick or when they're in the process of leaving us of what we pray for, and that everything that we pray for must be for their highest good and in accordance with their own fur agreements, not what we want to see happen to make us feel better. We also have to learn to be in the moment, to put our small selves aside and to come from our heart and our sacred spirit with them. And we have to learn to just simply be love, not give love, because being love is actually a state of being, and it requires so much more of us and from us. But in the end, we also retain so much more from that. So it's about learning to be love. And then ultimately, it's also learning that we have that capacity, as I said a little earlier, to love in many layers and degrees, and that it is all perfect just as it is, just as it's unfolding. This is how we and they agreed that this would happen, and we're there to support them in that process.
That's beautiful. I would like to add something, if I may.
Sure.
In much of, as a psychic medium, in much of my work, I mostly deal with humans, of course, and I have canceled, I don't know how many people that, you know, after someone transitions and moves on to their next phase, it's crucial that we try not, to the best of our ability, not to pull at them with the heaviness of our grief, because then we're literally having an impact on what they're doing on the other side, and that's what they need to be doing. And the same applies to pets. And we open our heart, move into acceptance, and recognize and understand that, okay, this is part of their journey. And like you're saying, for their highest good, I'm going to do my best to accept this. We want to be careful not to pull at them. And so in a few minutes, I'll ask you ways that we can honor them in a much more positive way and practice that sense of detachment that allows us to heal. But first, on a lighter note, I wanted to ask you about the funny story you tell about Barney Beagle Bassett Hale.
Yes, that is one of my most precious memories. A very good friend of mine, Wanda LaRosalier, brought Barney to me because he had been bitten by a snake, and I had done some healing work on him, and we became very, very close. Well, about a year ago, she had called me up and said, I feel like he may be getting close to his time. He's just not seeming himself. And I tuned in, and I got that same information, that it was getting close. So she took him to the vet to try to, of course, do what we do and give him whatever he required from them. And she sent me a picture of him, a little text picture of him drinking some water and peeing for the first time in several days. Well, as it turned out, shortly after that, Barney did transition, and within a day or so, all of a sudden, my phone started going off, and that text message, the picture of Barney, started appearing on my phone. And it happened like 10 or 12 times, and Wanda called me one night and said, did you just get a text from me? And I'm like, yeah, I did. It's Barney's picture. What's going on? And she said, well, I was in bed, and my phone was in the kitchen, and I heard it go off. And what we later found out was literally for 6 months, I got probably at least 50 or 60 of these, but Barney was sending texts from the other side to me, keeping Wanda and I connected because he wanted her to be able to become another guardian for another pet, and she was trying to figure out what to do, what would it look like, that kind of thing. But literally for 6 months, Barney texted me, and we kept the pictures and the proof of it, and we were never in the same place at the same time. The phones would just go off, and the texts would appear out of nowhere magically.
My goodness. I've seen some pretty amazing things in my work, but that's one impressive dog.
He loves his mama.
Text messages. That's great that he wanted to keep you connected. And did she get the pet that he wanted her to be the guardian for?
She absolutely did. About, I think, 6 months later, she found this wonderful little girl named Heidi, who is now taken over, and she's a big dog. Barney was, you know, of course, little, but she has basically taken over the household. So, and literally after she adopted Heidi, the tech stopped. So his service was complete.
Oh, my goodness. That is an amazing story. I love this stuff, you know? Wow. Well, why don't we, let's talk about a few things about, you mentioned in the book that there are very, very crafty, very unique ways that we can honor it and try to help the healing process. What are some of the recommendations you pointed out?
Okay. One of the things that we do a lot is we will actually hold celebrations of life, and we'll bring the family members together, and we'll have a party, and there'll be pictures, and everyone will gather around, and we'll even video the services. We've done that several times, but everyone who was ever involved with that pet's life will share their memories and bring something for that. One of the things I love to do, I wish I'd known to do it many years ago, but I started about 10 years ago, is I actually make like little paw prints with little pad and ink, and I frame them. I also snip their hair, take a picture, and put them in picture frames, and even you can make a collage with different, you know, different pictures or different situations. You can, write a special poem or a song or a story or just your little reminiscences in a journal. I have several different animal journals that I keep only devoted to those that have passed and the stories about them. But what all these things are, there's no wrong way to remember and to celebrate your beloved pet's life at all. The only wrong thing, if there's considered to be something wrong, is to have somebody talk you out of doing anything or out of what you're feeling, and by saying, oh, it's just a pet, it's just a dog, just a cat, you know, why are you so upset? You're allowed your grief, and as long as it takes to move through that and honor it is as long as it takes. And I want to also encourage your listeners to know that if you have dreams about them, if you think you got a glimpse of them out of the corner of your eye, or if their ball just rolls out down the hallway from nowhere, those things are really happening, and those are messages from your pet letting you know that they're still there, they're watching over you, and that they're okay. So don't think you just made it up or that you're crazy with grief or that it really didn't happen. Those experiences are true and real, and they're worth embracing.
They're absolutely real, and many people report hearing their fingernails, their nails on the floor, walking through the house. They come and visit. They walk around. Sometimes there's a smell and associated with it. But, yes, they love us, and it's the same as with humans. They are with us. And make it fun if you want to look for these signs, or, you know, ask for a dream when they come and visit you. It really is a joyous occasion when they come to visit. I've had the blessing of that experience as well. What I'd like to move on to from here is Blue Angel. Who is the Blue Angel, and what does she mean to our pets?
I tell you, she's become one of my favorite people angels. The Blue Angel is actually now the angel for healing and for transition of the animals. And she originally came to me by helping to move my cats who were transitioning, and that was her whole focus, was to make the process easier and help me get through it and help me be of support to them. And as I connected with her, what began to happen was she began to see literally all over the world more and more pets beginning to release themselves and people needing help and support. And so she actually channeled to me that she was now going to be here for any healing, for transition work, for whatever people might need. And all you have to do, she actually predominantly works through me, but I channel meditative prayers for her on every conceivable subject that the animal might need, and then also people can learn about her and tune in and work with her themselves. And just anytime there's anything going on with their beloved pet, ask the Blue Angel to come in and help heal the situation. And it's a wonderful resource because there just weren't really any angels completely devoted only to the animals, and this is her full-time mission now.
Wow. Yes, you give very specific instructions, the number of prayers. You say it can take from minutes to hours, but you feel a warm presence radiating throughout your energy field. And this is something I wish I had known about with the loss of pets many years ago. But this is beautiful information. And you also discuss calling in the Blue Angel for healing, connecting with the Blue Angel, specific steps. And you also mentioned in the book that you have been blessed with the experience of extending, providing just enough healing for the pet, even though they are at the end of their lifetime, just enough time to allow the family a little more time to say goodbye. What a beautiful gift.
I tell you, It was quite shocking. I didn't realize that was actually happening, and then we started keeping track of it. And so far, the past 3 years, each animal that I have worked with, and this has also happened with some human families, but it's been, and this happened with Barney Beagle, but from the time of me hearing about the situation until the time of passing has been about a week. And so they get about an extra week or so to truly be able to say your goodbyes and everything that you could possibly say. And that is something I would like to encourage your listeners to do, is that when your beloved gets sick, you know, don't wait and don't focus just on what's happening, but start telling them how much you love them and thanking them for what they've been to your life, and just make sure you don't leave anything left unsaid, because those are the hardest things for us to live through, or what we've never said.
Hmm. Interesting. And in this prayer that you provide, you mention St. Francis of Assisi. On the lighter side, my question for you is, did you feel as I did when I was a kid, like you were somehow like a distant cousin of St. Francis?
Absolutely. A good friend of mine actually called me the female St. Francis at one point, and I took that as such a wonderful compliment. But I always loved him from the time I was a little girl, and I have statues of him in my house, too. Mm. So there's always been an affinity there for him.
Yes, he's always been one of my favorite saints. And would you like to hear something funny?
Yeah.
So I held on to this. I created this little belief in my head, like, oh, I'm like the third cousin twice removed of St. Francis, because I'm so good with the animals, particularly the wild ones. And I, through the years, I found that hands down, when you sing to them, their favorite song is Amazing Grace. Even snakes. Snakes.
Wow.
I've seen snakes come to the top of the cage to get closer to the vibration. Very interesting.
Yeah.
But I was corrected by my guides on this. And I subsequently got myself in a little bit of hot water there. But I wanted to have an experience with this really nice-looking bear that was in the woods in the Smoky Mountains. And I tapped in and gauged my safety level. And I said, okay, I really don't feel that today's the day I'm going to die. And so we moved in a little closer to try to get a better look at the bear and her cubs. And the primal fear I felt was amazing in itself, but I did make sure I was safe, and they were a good distance away. But afterwards, I got the message from my guides, and they said, you know, Charlotte, wild animals are not toys. And I said, yes, well then, why did God put them on my planet to play with? Like, for me to play with. And it was like, you know, we tire of your arrogance. Oh, my God. I got like a two-hour lecture. 2 hours later, I'm still typing, because I type it all down in my journal. And it's like, you know, I know, but you know how much I really love these experiences. So I didn't have a whole lot that day, but I did have a wonderful experience several years ago with the bear in the Ocala National Forest who had come to the property where I was living to die. And I felt like that was a wonderful honor. For that bear to pick that space, and he looked me in the eyes. I got a beautiful picture of him from about 8 feet away. He was very, very calm, very sad. So I made sure people stayed away and let nature take its course. And it was a beautiful experience, and I really felt that the message he brought to me was basically, don't worry, everything in 2 years is going to be totally different. And it was. It really was.
I fully get you, because I had the greatest honor to work with the big cats, and Rick was always so afraid I'd come home, or I wouldn't come home, because I would have gotten eaten, you know, but I took every bite mark and every kiss and every hug and everything else. It's just something that, like, so few people in the world could experience, and it was the ultimate honor, and just awakened the sense of ancientness and an ancient memory and understanding. So I get that, and I think, you know, the more we can evolve to understand that when they are being called home, even though for us, yes, it's a sense of loss, you know, it is the ultimate honor to be able to be with them as they take that last breath and there's that last kiss and that last heartbeat. I mean, that is what I live for, and sometimes I'm deprived of it, and I've had to learn to understand that and make peace with it. But those last moments, to me, there is nothing more sacred as they move into the next wave.
Right. And you do communicate. You are an animal communicator. My question, as I was listening to you say that, is have you gotten a message from an animal who did want to be alone when that time came, and did they offer any type of explanation for that?
Yes, that's happened twice now. The first one was with Karma, and actually it had to come, the message had to come to me through a friend of mine because I was so heavy in my grief, that was just his thing. He felt the need to just be alone, but at the end, actually, because I was so new to this whole process, he relented and asked me to be there with him. But then later with my little treasure map, we found out that his whole thing was he really did want to be alone just because his work had been served, and he knew it wasn't about me, that he was literally fulfilling his own journey, and he had no requirement for my assistance. And I cried and cried and cried because it was only my second time going through that, and I was still in the humanity, you know, the human part too. But it is so interesting that there are things that they've got to do alone just like we do, and it's often releasing us.
Yes. I had a client about a year and a half ago, her cat, she found her cat outside, and she wanted to basically determine if there was foul play on the part of a neighbor or was it natural. So I had to kind of tap in, and I reassured her, no, she had a serious infection in her intestinal tract or something. I don't remember exactly what was said, but the cat did know, and she did want to be alone and that type of thing. I love that we have the ability to try to understand this, and I want your opinion on another scenario that I experienced, if that's okay.
Oh, sure.
Somebody called me with regard to their family dog that they had had a very long time, going on, I guess, around 13 years. And so I tapped in. They wanted to know what the physical condition was all about, and the dog had tumors that had grown on her belly. And I feel kind of silly because, you know, when you kind of go into your third eye and you're in the zone and you don't really think left brain, you can't think logically. And I said, well, yeah, the dog's got these growths on her belly. I looked at it and I analyzed the energy. I said, what is this? I said, how is it possible that this dog never had a litter of puppies? How is that possible? Like, and I just was totally confused. And she says, well, we had her neutered, you know. When we first got her, I said, oh, you know, like, then it made sense. I said, well, that's what happened. The body fully anticipated procreating, and because that process was interrupted, that's where the tumors are coming from. My question for you is, as necessary as it is in population control and making sure that, you know, these extra lives are prevented from coming here and not being taken care of by the human families, what are your feelings? Do you have any mixed emotions like I do about neutering?
Wow, I've never been asked that. Yes, and yeah, you know, I'll have to admit to this. I had terrible baby fever, and I had a couple of litters of kittens because my heart was just so devastated from the loss of my Ebony. And, you know, I heard the same arguments. But I think ultimately whatever does happen is that agreement. You know what I'm saying? And we can kind of go through it intellectually or whatever, but I really believe now that after the work that I've done on this, is that whatever happens, if you have the puppies or the kittens, or if you have them neutered and spayed at an early age or whatever, that is within that agreement, you know, because
yeah,
it wouldn't happen if it weren't supposed to. I mean, I just can't not believe that, given everything I've been shown over the past few years. So I just have to learn to be fine with all the decisions because, you know, they're not my decisions always.
Yes. No, I totally agree with you, and that makes me feel a lot better because, I was kind of conflicted and on a fence about it because, yes, it's necessary, but then having gotten such a deep connection to the energy of, but my body was built to have babies, and now I couldn't, and that feeling, it stuck with me. It was very troubling for a little while, but that makes me feel a lot better. Yes, like, even we as humans, we have that contract that determines how many children we ourselves will have. Or if not at all, or if we will adopt or have an extended family by taking in the children of relatives. So I think that takes us full circle right back to the beginning. That was perfect.
Oh, good.
We're going to do some extra segments in the near future, so we'll have to plan those out. But this has been an absolute joy sitting and being able to talk about these things with you.
Oh, thank you. I have loved every minute of it. And however I can be of a resource to you or to your listeners, that is what I'm here for. So just know that I'm here for everybody, however I can be.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for spending time with us and sharing your amazing information about our pet friends. And I look forward to talking to you soon, okay?
Thank you. This has been wonderful, and y'all be blessed, and thank you for the opportunity, Charlotte.
You're so welcome. So I'm just going to tell the audience, whether you're grieving the loss of a pet or you would like to deepen your awareness of the bond we have with our animal friends, the book is The Fur Agreement, Lessons in Consciousness from the Animals by Dr. Tricia Working, W-O-R-K-I-N-G. You can visit her website at pauseforthoughtinc.com, and that is spelled P-A-W-S, number 4, T-H-O-U-G-H-T-I-N-C.com. You can also share your thoughts on this segment or her book by emailing her at dr.trishaworking, all one word, at yahoo.com. We do hope that you've enjoyed spending this time with us and learning about a unique peek into the spiritual side of pet ownership and our companions that sign up to take our journeys with us. And until next time, God bless all of you. Thank you for tuning in, and be at peace.